Hu Zhao wrote it in 1681 for Bahram Khan, his third son, after the latter was officially elected chief by the Khatak tribal assembly, Jirga. Earlier, since 1672, Bahram Khan had openly confronted Hu Zhao Khan and his elder brother, Ashraf Khan, in struggle for supremacy in the tribe. Hu Zhao Khan formulates in this qasida, in this poem, a number of helpful maxims directly related to the art of chieftaincy. The list of instructions in this charter expectedly begins with a prescription, with an order to adhere strictly to Islamic norms. However, this order is unexpectedly confined to a single line, after which Hu Zhao Khan immediately turns to the concepts of Pashtun Wali, calling for unconditional abidance by the rules of the Pashtun Code of Honor. He calls it the Pakhtane Nangunam, using Persian terminology in poetry. While you have enough strength and God's assistance, do not step back for a moment from the Pashtun laws of honor. In Pashto, Chede Tuan Tofikra Segi, Birun Masha Yaukadam, the Pakhtane Le Nangunam. As everywhere in his works, Hu Zhao Khan accentuates here in this poem two fundamental principles of tribal rulers' conduct. Giving, Varkavel, and fighting, Ture Vahel, he writes, these two things are needed for the affairs of chieftaincy, Sardari, to be accomplished. According to him, generosity of a ruler must be pragmatic, and any expenditures must have their reasonable limitations. He advises to patronize faithful and steadfast subalterns, khidzwanan, who would be unfaltering assistants, whether in administrative affairs or in wars. He cautions against excessive reliance on tribal assemblies, jirgas, marakas, which are regarded by him, by the way, it's also a very important thing, regarded by him as ineffective governmental bodies. And he insists on mandatory obedience of subjects, and many other things. For example, praises persistence in keeping to the law of retaliation. You may see the quotation. In many lines of his poem, he sharply criticizes the Khataks, his own tribe, for continuous discords and conflicts. And without any embarrassment, he calls his fellow tribesmen ungrateful beasts, and states that only thanks to his family, to the ruling clan, Helkhana, the Khataks have not fallen apart. His much smaller charter of a tribal ruler dwells on the same two basic tenets of chieftaincy, of the two ethical principles, valor and generosity. The brief survey of these both charters on the art of ruling clearly demonstrates that the Khatak chief voiced rather authoritarian views, in which adherence to old customary laws was coupled with an evident departure from the traditional egalitarianism of tribal society. The contents of all other verses on chieftaincy in Hu Zhao's collected lyrics may be perfectly summarized by a maxim with which begins one of his ghazals. The one who gains, consumes, and bestows is a true man. The one who follows the law of Vala is a true Khan. Chegatel Khwarel Bachelka Khan Khage, Che Toralari de Ture Khan Khage. Time and again, Hu Zhao Khan identifies primary function of tribal military administrative elite with trade of war. And in the most concise form, the idea of correlation between administrative power and military profession is worded by him in a motto, Throne of Funeral Board, Yatakh de Yatakhta, that is, rule or die. That valor and generosity were considered two major criteria in assessment of the Pashtun chieftain's morals is confirmed also by Hu Zhao's brief eulogies to his ancestors, who are praised for having exactly these qualities, valor and generosity. So you may see on the slides some quotations about this. And in his sporadic self-praises, Fakhriye, Khujalkhan evaluated himself according to the same criteria. He underlined as well his social origin and status, his status as of a person belonging to tribal aristocracy, to military administrative aristocracy, and vigorously dissociated himself from any other stratum, from peasants, from merchants, from artisans, and of course from clergymen. His profession, inherited from the ancestors, he called figuratively the clink of blades. It goes without saying that negative qualities opposite to valor, generosity, and all other virtues of a righteous ruler are constantly reproved in Khujal's verses. As an antipode of an ideal sovereign and a regular target of his poetical vilifications, Hajj, Khujalkhan chose Emperor Aurangzeb, with whom he, of course, exaggeratedly associated all his misfortunes of imprisonment in Ranthambore and later descents in the Khatak tribe. If Aurangzeb plays in the Khujal's poetry a stereotypic tyrant, execrated for any possible vice, a number of individuals of the poet's own stratum, including his closest relatives, are disparaged as unworthy rulers, mostly according to the moral standards of Pashtun Wali, which, with reference to actual events in the territories of the Khataks and their neighbors. In the same way, Khujalkhan attacked with critical verses his counterparts from the neighboring Yusufzai tribe. Most of these verses date back to the years of the big Mughal-Afghan War of 1672-76, when the Yusufzai clans, in the mass, backed out of participation in armed clashes with imperial armies. And that turned to be a suitable occasion for Khujalkhan to accuse the Yusufzai chieftains of breaking the laws of honor, of Pashtun honor, laws of Nang. And a collective image of a Yusufzai chieftain in his, of Yusufzai Malik in his verses, satirical verses, is a kind of yokel whose major attributes are cowardice and miserliness. Of course, the same two qualities contrary to valor and generosity. Undoubtedly, such satirical verses aimed not only at defaming and deriding particular people in connection with specific circumstances, but also at propagating ethical values of the Pashtun code of honor. Thus, we have every right to regard them, together with laudations of ancestors, as an illustrative part of Khujalkhan's mirror for princes. Then I'm going to the fourth part of my talk, Afzal Khan Khatak, the grandson of Khujalkhan, on political power. From the last two parts, fourth and fifth, are absolutely new. The material was not published before, and I didn't know that someone else worked with these sources. So, other even greater portion of illustrative material on the art of chieftaincy may be extracted from the Khatak's chronicle. Remind you that this is the original, the largest original part of Tarikh-e Murassa. In fact, the very notion of chieftaincy underlay the key ideological implications of this collection of miscellaneous texts authored by Khujalkhan and his grandson Afzal Khan, both the Khatak hereditary rulers. In my opinion, the common thread running throughout the chronicle is the succession of power by the right of primogeniture. The chronicle begins with the lineage of the Khatak ruling clan, and then narrates the history of conflicts related mostly to the contest for supremacy in the tribe. Written largely in the form of diaries and memoirs rather than historiographic narratives, it provides us with detailed picture of how the Khatak rulers applied the art of chieftaincy in practice. The central idea of the chronicle becomes much clearer with consideration of the Afzal's introduction, Dibacha, to Tarikh-e Murassa, general introduction to this compilation. Besides a brief explanation of the goals and contents of the book, this traditional Sababik Ta'lifi Kitab, this introduction contains the author's discourse on the concept of political power, iktidar. Factually, this is an independent work, a small treatise, Risala, in which Afzal Khan examines theoretical aspects of power and administration. His arguments Afzal regularly supports with references to Dastar-nama and the verses of his grandfather, while allusions to Quran and Muslim traditions seem to be much less frequent, and mentions to any other sources are absent at all. It has to be stressed that such kind of scholarly essay, entirely dedicated to the notion of political power, apparently was a pioneering, was the first one in the Pashto language. The core postulate in the Afzal Khan's exposition, of course, follows basic Muslim tenets, maintaining the divine nature of power. Afzal reiterates a prevailing idea that God exercises his power over people by selecting among them the most worthy and capable individuals, that is, kings in his terminology, Badshahan. Disobedience to kings equals, according to him, disobedience to God. But at the same time, he states that power is a very hard test for kings, who in order to pass it and win favor of God, have to abide by laws of justice, adl, and mercy, ihsan. Then Afzal Khan identifies and characterizes three main forms of acquisition of administrative authority. This is a very interesting part of this introduction of this risala. Consensual form, ijma'i, hereditary, mirasi or mawrusi, and appropriative, taglibi. The first form presumes consensus of people over the candidature of a ruler, and somehow corresponds to the ideas of general ideas, universal ideas of electivity and social contract. The second one means succession by right of blood relationship, of course, and the third one implies primary acquisition of power by force. According to Afzal Khan, all these forms are legitimate. Whatever bookish sources of these theoretical views may have been, the very forms of acquiring supremacy mentioned by Afzal Khan reflected real practices of social and political interactions among Pashtuns and conformed with common rules of lawful obtaining the status of a chieftain. Consensual form agrees with the procedure of election of a chieftain by tribal assembly, jirga. Hereditary form is the transfer of authority within the ruling clan, khanhel. Appropriative form matches the so-called self-nomination of a group leader through exhibiting personal skills and qualities. To illustrate the latter, Afzal Khan mentions the circumstances of how two Pashtun dynasties, the Lodis and the Suris, came to power in the Delhi Sultanate. However, in the late 16th century, Afzal Khan's own ancestor, Malik Akorai, the great-grandfather of Khushal Khan, seized leadership in the Khatak tribe right in the same way of appropriation or self-nomination. And this is told in the Khatak's Chronicle, this story. Appropriation of power naturally requires use of military force and, again, vala, tura. Afzal highlights this idea but stipulates that the power appropriated by force may be acknowledged as legitimate only if, quotation, the life of people becomes better than it was before. Quotation finished. In the Khatak tribe, after the formation of the ruling clan, after the formation of Khanhel, somewhere in the early 17th century, there was a certain balance between the consensual and the hereditary forms of acquiring supremacy. Although de jure priority remained with the first form, which was an exponent of tribal patriarchal democracy, de facto, during few decades, the chieftaincy in the tribe, with the jirga's consent, of course, regularly passed from father to eldest son. In his essay, Afzal Khan does not advocate openly the priority of hereditary transfer of power, but I think that it is this concept that dominates the ideology of the Hatak's Chronicle. According to Afzal Khan, a claimant to supremacy, that is chieftaincy, must meet some requirements. You may see them on the slide. This is impeccable reputation, descent from a noble family of a ruling stratum, then local or vatani origin, adulthood, maturity, administrative experience, intelligence, education. Then Afzal enumerates 10 moral qualities which are obligatory for a ruler, and these qualities, some of these qualities overlap with those discussed by Khushal Khan in his Dastarnama. His discourse on power and politics, Afzal Khan concludes with contemplations over the main causes of social disturbances and mutinies. Such causes he sees in tyranny, despotism, violence, and all kinds of misuse of administrative authority. He states that successful ruling may be accomplished through the denial of violent methods of governments on the one hand, and providing a balance in relations between three social groups, namely ordinary subjects, raya, nobility, mahsusan, and army, sipahyan. Like his grandfather's teachings in Dastarnama, Afzal Khan's theoretical speculations on power in the introduction to Tarikh-e Murassa can be correctly interpreted as an output of his own administrative experience, and only through the study of the chronicle, of the Hatak's chronicle, which offers plenty of factual material on the Afzal's ways of exercising political authority in capacity of the Hatak chieftain during three decades, from 1692 to 1724. So, and now I'm coming to the last part of my talk, real politics in the epistles of the Hatak chieftains. Among the documents included in the chronicle, there are two pieces which formally also may be attributed to the Nasihat al-Muluk genre. These are epistles composed by Khushal and Afzal, grandfather and grandson, in connection with actual events in the Hatak tribe. The epistle of Khushal Khan is quoted under the title The Testament, Vasiyat Nama, which relates immediately to old literary tradition going back as far as to the times of the first Muslim caliphs. Khushal wrote it in the Rantamkhor prison in 1666, as an instructive letter to his eldest son Ashraf, Afzal's father, who replaced him as the Hatak chieftain by the right of primogeniture, with the sanction of the Mughal authorities and the Jirga. Thereby, it appears that the document was called the Testament, was not so much because of some historical allusions to the old times, Muslim times of Muslim history, but for the reason that Khushal expected his in incarceration to be the life sentence. The testament is not a legal document concerning disposal of property or imposition of an obligation. But this is a political declaration with the guidelines for the members of the Hatak ruling family on what policy should be pursued towards particular clans and factions which took part in the internal tribal conflict after the author was arrested by the Mughals in January 1664. Khushal Khan figuratively called this document the Seventh Red Testament, or Vepreka Vasiyat Nama, explaining that it would deal with seven groups, qism, which are involved in the schism among the people, the Oles Betafrika Dahil.
Among the Hataks.
Among the Hataks, yes, in the Hatak tribe. In the opening passage of the Testament, the author immediately refers to a distinction among these groups between the relatives, Khpel, and the strangers, Radi, namely the Hataks and the neighboring Yusuf Zais. Such a remark signals about the inborn dichotomy of a Pashtun chieftain's ethno-cultural consciousness with regard to the primordial differentiation between self and other, and once again ascertains the meanings of these important notions in the minds of Pashtuns in pre-modern times. Along with other numerous evidences in the Hatak's chronicle, this remark indicates that by the word Hpel, the Hatak chieftains always, with no exceptions, always meant only their fellow tribesmen, only the Hataks. While the word Pradi, foreigners, this is the German Fremde, this is the same root. With the word Pradi, the word Pradi, term Pradi in their lexicon designated all other people, and primarily other Pashtuns from other tribes. The very wording of the testament is rather intriguing in the sense that Khujal Khan chose to designate the groups under consideration with fictitious metaphoric names, thus demonstrating his personal attitude towards them. Three groups of the strangers are the Yusufzai clans, Bayizai, Ranizai, and Kamalzai, respectively nicknamed Babazai, Rahmatzai, and Kamzatzai. So the first two, as their sobriquets indicate, are declared friendly. I won't go now into details why. And with the Kamalzais, the Hatak rulers had been permanently in the state of feud since the times of Khujral's great-grandfather Malik Akoray. If the groups of these strangers in the testament are particular tribal subdivisions of the Hatak, of the Yusufzai tribe, and they are registered in the Yusufzai genealogies, the relatives are political factions, not clans, but political factions within the Hatak tribe, that is, the unions of various clans and families, which are much less identifiable, of course, because of these metaphorical appellations invented for them by Khujal Khan. So these Hatak groups, as you may see, bear the names Saadat Hel, Nakis Hel, Marbut Hel, and Muzabzabin, according to their positions as regards the transfer of chieftaincy in the Hatak tribe from imprisoned Khujal Khan to his elder son Ashraf. I miss this fragment where I identify these groups, so I think that I managed to do that. So the testament of Khujal Khan is the earliest extant specimen of a written directive of a Pashtun chieftain concerning the internal tribal policies. This document well demonstrates the priorities of the tribal ruler's administration. It proves that in the period of political instability, interrelations between various subdivisions of a tribe became of foremost importance, and ensuring peaceful coexistence of conflicting groups was considered much more preferable to imposing chieftains' authoritative rule by force. Of the same ad hoc nature was the Nasihatul Muluk epistle by Afzal Khan, which appeared over 50 years later, under the neutral generic name Admonition Pandnama. Afzal composed this document in 1719 after he was temporarily removed from power by his younger brother Namdar Khan. Intended to be circulated among the members of the Hatak ruling clan, Admonition declared Afzal Khan's attitude to internal tribal conflicts in general and his political confrontation with his brother Namdar Khan in particular. By presenting himself as an experienced and responsible ruler, who cares much about the welfare of his people, Afzal wished to regain support of his relatives in order to start a legitimate campaign against his brother. Unlike Afzal's essay in the introduction to Tarikh-i Murassam, Admonition is a diplomatic message. It is not treatise, it is not risala, it is a diplomatic message written in an extremely evasive and equivocal style. The very subject of this document and the circumstances in which it appeared explain why no names, no dates, no real facts are mentioned in it. In fact, it is very hard to translate this document. On the other hand, such elusiveness makes for perceiving this text to a greater degree as a product of theoretical analysis of a particular political conflict. Key points of Afzal's reasoning in Admonition, summarized by me, you may see on this slide. And there is a nice quotation from this document. You may see it. The last phrase, I liked it very much. Though now in this age my soul does not have any ardent desire for chieftaincy, Sardari, for ruling the homeland, Vatan Dari, for satisfying other passions, to calm down anxieties about the children, the people, the tribes, would be far from the ways of true man. Afzal Khan's admonition shares with the testament of his grandfather the features of both ad hoc letters, performing momentary political tasks, and the Nasihat al-Muluk texts generalizing about long-term administrative practices. It is for this reason that Afzal Khan distinguished admonition from his other correspondence by identifying it under the ancient appellation of a literary genre. Confer with Sasanian Pandnama, the same title. In accompanying remarks, he explained that admonition was addressed to everybody, alal umum, and its contents were homilies, waz, and advices, nasihat. And conclusion. So I'm coming to conclusion. Just a couple of passages. The writings of the Pashtun chieftains Khujal Khan and Afzal Khan on the art of ruling occupy a distinctive and independent niche in Pashto literature of pre-modern times, standing apart from prevailing lyrical, religious, philosophical, and didactical genres. Shaped by literary tradition of classical Persian Mirror for Princes, the works by the Khatak literators reflect a strong individual approach to the subject, which is treated in full conformity with the author's own views and experiences, as well as social and political realities of the Pashtun's tribal life in the heyday of the Mughal Empire. Including a variety of prose and poetical texts, these writings offer the most authentic primary material on the political ideology, ethics, and education of Pashtun military administrative elite. They prove that the outlook and behavioral patterns of Pashtun chieftains stemmed from a combination, sometimes quite eclectic and contradictory, of Islamic precepts and norms, rules imposed by Pashtun customary law, Pashtun wali, and feudal ideologies of the Mughal governmental system. The idea of divinely determined supremacy supplemented the common practice of self-nominated leadership based on personal skills and ambitions. The perception of collective authority exercised by tribal assembly, Jirga, conjoined with the firm belief in the efficiency of one-man power,